Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We are live over on YouTube, aka The Tube. We're live on Facebook. We're live on Twitch. We're live on Twitter. We're live on Crowdcast.
Oh,
we're live on your cell phone, everywhere. We're hacking into every place imaginable. It's very exciting.
We're like a villain in a comic book movie. We're on every channel, every which place.
Or maybe you're listening later on Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts. Either way, it's all good. And we have a awesome show for you tonight. I'm very excited about the guests that we have here. But first of all, any business to discuss? Anything we should talk about before the show starts? Any pressing news items you want to bring up, Justin?
I'm still Justin. I'm in a kitchen. So I'm sort of upstairs Justin, which is in the classic British style. I'm more aristocratic. I'm a little bit fancier. Mm. I'm drinking a red beer rather than a regular colored
beer. Oh, a red beer?
You see,
That doesn't sound good. I think your beer is sick.
Beer sick? Yeah, it's just just a little bit of finger blood.
Pete, I can't help but notice you didn't blur your background today. Are you okay with everybody seeing the hoodies behind you and the fact that
you're what, Zalbin? Here's another great example of you using information that I gave you as a friend, and you're using it against me.
What?
Congratulations.
What's the secret?
You have hoodies behind you?
The worst person on this podcast, so just... You know what I mean? Just do it.
Here's what I want. All right. So Pete usually blurs the background because he has hoodies behind him, which is fine. You own hoodies. It's okay. They're actually very nicely arranged, I think. It's not a problem. It gives a little character and color to your background.
It goes from the most brightly colored one on the left over to the darkest one on the right.
Exactly. It's a veritable rainbow of hoodies. If anybody is upset that Pete has hoodies behind. Oh, and you're wearing another hoodie. Wow, five hoodies. That's amazing.
Well, yeah, but also I'm just showing off my
flex.
New Orleans
hoodie flex
t-shirt because I just got back from an amazing food tasting and tour.
That was like a month
city.
Ago, bro.
Hey, I'm still living
there.
He
never
there in
left. He never left. Exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, anyway, if you are upset that Pete has hoodies behind us, please write us at comicbookclublive@gmail.com and we will make people, Pete, re-blur the background. That's the big pressing thing we needed to talk about here at the top of the show.
Blur the background, disguise his voice with one of those little things you talk into. Let's really all go full witness protection.
Absolutely. Just based on these hoodies, the worst thing that I've ever seen, personally. I'm very upset about it. Pete's actually getting upset.
I think this is a great way to start the show. I don't feel weird for our guests who then got to come in and talk to us. I think you're doing great.
They have no hoodies because that's clearly a scene.
Yeah, I've already seen their cameras. And they had actually, all of our guests had a bunch of hoodies behind them, but they were like, that looks terrible. Let's get rid of
them. It's not professional. You're right. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
listen, I'll tell you what. Let's bring in our first professional guest and see what she thinks about this hoodie situation.
Good.
She is the creator of The Other Happy Place, an awesome-looking new book that is coming from Zoop. Ladies and gentlemen, Jessie Sharon. Jessie, hello. Welcome.
Hi. It's so nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my gosh. Hello. Thank you for coming on. This book is so cool-looking. Now, I'm going to say this wrong, so please correct me immediately after I say it, but at least in terms of the Zoop, it's not a book yet. You're putting up an art book that shows the look of the book. Is that correct?
I'm calling it Chapter Zero. It's the art book. It's kind of like the proof of concept or like have you ever seen like a show Bible? That's kind of what it is.
Sure. So yeah. Like, oh, very cool.
There's bits of lore. There's like my thought process, but a lot of art of like the entities that are in the story, the location, but a lot of like standalone illustrations that I think kind of tell their own story. So it's like, you still get narrative out of it. It's just not a comic at the moment. No, it's an art book. Yeah.
This is such an interesting way to approach a project. We have lots of people with different Kickstarters and Zoop projects and other things like that. What was the idea behind releasing the art book first rather than, say, jumping right into the book?
Well, a couple things was, one, I'm just really proud of the art I've made. It's like probably my favorite art I've ever made in my life. So what my narrative partner, Kaylin, she's the one who's helping me with the story. She was like, I think you have enough art to put on an art book. And I was like, do you think people will want that? I was like, I wasn't sure if I was at the level. And and she was like, yeah, for sure. And I floated. I was like, would people be interested in an art book? And people were like, yes. And I was like, oh, okay. So, but what I like about the art book too, is it's like a sample, like hors d'oeuvres of what the story is going to be. So I feel like you get a good taste of what the world is, kind of like a movie trailer almost, but it's like a solid 50 plus page book of art on every single page. So it's a little bit between a picture book and an art book is what I would call it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's all the fun stuff. You were like, let's do the fun first, which I think is a great way to go.
And
by
just to be clear, so we know in case people are just listening, these images are now like burned into my brain and will haunt my nightmares forever. These are some of the creepiest, also most beautiful pictures I've ever seen. Was the is the kind of thought process behind it, like, I have scary images in my head and now I want to share it and haunt other people? I mean, what's the
That's what being an artist is, Pete.
Essentially, yeah. It's like, I have to think about this. Now you think about it, right?
Yeah, exactly. This is in my head. Now, you know, your nightmares forever.
I've loved horror for years and years and years, but I didn't ever think I was like good enough to give it a go. Oh. And at the end of 2021, I was like, screw it. I'm just gonna make a side account and I'll give it a try because I love so many horror movies. Like Hellraiser is probably like my all-time favorite film. And
I think you're showing a little bit of Hellraiser here.
Yeah, Clive Barker is a big influence. I love him. I'm deeply drawn to cosmic horror and like supernatural horror that's beyond understanding. And so I was like, I want to do that kind of story. And so my brain really started working on those concepts. And I was like, I want to make something that is as unique as I can do. So I tried really hard. Like, it really makes me happy that you say it's beautiful and scary. I know this is an audio medium on Spotify, but there's a big visual motif of butterflies, which I was really happy when I landed on that, and primary colors and light. I am really into the idea of light and color being a source of horror rather than just simply darkness. And I'm really into this French idea of the call of the void, which is like you're standing on the top of a building and you wanna jump, but you don't wanna jump. And in cosmic horror, there's this like idea of you wanna know, but you don't wanna know. It's like the people who have to read the Necronomicon, right? There's nothing good in there, but you wanna know. I want to evoke that sort of feeling. It's like, oh, it's beautiful. I don't like what's happening, but I wanna look at it. So it means a lot that you get there. I'm like, yay, that makes me feel good.
I wanted to ask you about, I wanted to ask about one of your other influences, because this is immediately what I thought of, and I don't know if this played into it at all, but there's a book called The Mysteries of Harris Burdick by Chris Van Allsburg that immediately jumped out at me. You don't know it. Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. That it was not an influence. You should check out the book. It's super cool, but it's also very much like these very creepy pictures, and the idea is there's just these one or two lines about the story, usually the end of the story.
I love that.
So that kind of jumped out to me a little bit here. Yeah, you'll probably enjoy it.
I love when you have just enough information that you're completely lost. Like you're like, oh, you've given me this.
So I feel all the time.
Right. Well, yeah, it's a relatable feeling. And I really like it in horror and supernatural stories. It's like you're given just enough of a clue that you're like, what is that? And you chew on it and you're like, I don't know. What could that mean? So like, I like that kind of thing a lot. Yeah.
Now, after working on something like this, does it change your entry point into the next story you want to tell? Are you now like, oh, I'm going to do all of these? Like, how do you choose the first one you want to get into?
So after the art book, I have two things I'm actually currently working on. I paused it to like come over here to the podcast. So the two things I'm working on for after this is a comic book, or I say book, it's going to be online. It's a comic of the backstory of, there's a character with a butterfly coming out of his head. That's going to be his story. So it'll be about him and how he became like that. And the other thing I'm working on is a RPG maker game. It'll be pixel art. And that'll be a female character going around in an art museum solving puzzles and trying to escape. So, my ideal for this project is multimedia. So like the art book's the first thing, but next I want to do a comic. I want to do a game. It's like, I would like each part of the story to have a medium that fits it. And like, you can enjoy them on their own, or you can take in these different things and get a bigger picture, is like my goal for it anyway. I'm pretty ambitious with it.
Well, can you talk about your artistic process then? Because again, for anybody who's listening and not seeing the images, you have these incredibly detailed black and white images that have these beautiful glowing color pieces, like the butterflies that you mentioned that are layered over it, or there's some pictures where you just have these red bugs crawling and falling out of people's faces. So how do you approach this art? Is it different for each thing? Is there a unifying idea for the book?
Good. Okay, good. We're here. Sorry, the internet went blip a bit. Anyway, am I still in?
Yeah.
Yep, you're here.
Yeah, you're good.
Sorry about that. It's Comcastic. I don't know why it does. I'm trying. So my process, I went to school for art, and a lot of what I learned was traditional. So like, acrylic painting, ink, and charcoal. And I've always really liked that like tactileness. And I've tried to bring that into my digital art. So a lot of this, for what this project has been, as I've been studying a lot of like old black and white movies, black and white photos, things really high contrast, almost like having a lot of visual noise, grit to it. I'm not quite there yet. I'm approaching what I really want, but like I'm going for evoking a feeling of like an old movie that's gone horribly wrong. Like if you injected this into a 1960s film and it went all curdled, like that's kind of the feeling I want to evoke. So my process a lot of times is I don't know how many of y'all do visual art, but like I usually do a sketch, and then I'll do flat colors, and then most of the labor of the drawing is the last steps of the lighting and the shadows. It's a lot of layers and a lot of like working back and forth and like really capturing a glow. I'm always like literally just saving pictures of beautifully lit rooms, or like I'll be outside in a tunnel with like sodium lights and I'll take a picture of it because I'm like, that's perfect lighting for a scary scene. Meanwhile, I'm in a scary tunnel. but I'm always like I'm very much like a hoarder of resources. I really pull like visuals from like light is my most favorite thing to study. So
I like that you're chasing horror any which way you can find it.
Yeah.
You see something that's scary and you're like, I got to get this.
I take it very seriously. It's my passion. I really love horror. I think it's so fun. And
All I was going to say was, you mentioned this a little bit already, but we have a question from over on YouTube from Derek Mainhart says, so who are your influences?
Gosh. Okay. Clive Barker, H.P. Lovecraft. Mike Mignola. Gosh, that's like so many. I literally made a giant thread. A lot of Russian art is really, really good right now. Junji Ito, obviously. Trevor Henderson. Like I could literally name endlessly. I love art and I love horror art. I could literally send you a list of how many influences I have.
Derek Mainhart also suggests it's if Magritte and Clive Barker had a baby.
I love that. I love Magritte.
Congratulations.
He's one of my favorite painters. That's a really good call. That was really good. I see it.
Yeah. And their baby would probably look kind of terrifying too, just like your art. So I think that would all work out.
Beautiful.
Yes.
No babies. Horrifying, Alex.
All babies are beautiful. Absolutely. Unfortunately, it looks like Jesse froze a little bit, so Comcast is not cooperating. But in the meantime, I will mention that the Zoop campaign, while hopefully she's trying to get back, I guess we'll see what happens. But the Zoop campaign is going right now. It is very successful. I'm just clicking over to it here. The goal was $5,000. They are up to over $17,000 with 15 days left. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And yeah, hey, there's Jesse. Hello. I was just plugging your Zoom.
I don't want to keep messing up the show. If I'm messing it
up.
No,
all good. We were just plugging your Zoom a little bit. I mean, on that note, you've already met a couple of stretch goals. What can people expect if they go over to the campaign?
So I have the art book. So the book, I really wanted to be the main focus. So I really wanted it to look really good because you guys have been super awesome. It's already reached the stretch goal for having UV spotting on the butterflies on the cover. So I'm really happy about that. It also has stickers, which I've always wanted to do. I love stickers. And it has art prints over there. And I also have signed copies and sketches. And you can commission me if you want to. There's a spread, even though the focus is on the art book. But yeah, there's quite a few items over there. What I really hope is if it goes over 20, I could do a pin. I would love to do like an enamel pin. That would be really sick. So yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Wow. Jesse, this is so cool. This is such a cool project. I can't wait to check out the whole thing and also eventually down the road, check out the book or book.
I'm excited to show you. So yeah.
And the pins. We got to get to those pins.
Got to get to those pins. Jesse, thank you so much for coming on. Have a great night.
You have a nice night too.
All right. There we go. Once again, the project is called The Other Happy Place. It's on Zoop right now from Jesse Sharon, and it is so awesome. Definitely check it out.
Pete is scared silent.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's haunting and it's going to stay with you for a while, but it's also really beautifully done and amazing. So
I didn't want to mention this before, Justin. I don't know if I should mention this, but Pete, there are giant red bugs that have been crawling out of your face for years.
Haven't mentioned it, because
you guys
felt
are just
like
such great friends to not say something like that, you know.
By the way, there's none crawling out of the hoodies, though. The hoodies are just like pristine behind you.
I think the hoodies are the cure for the big red face bugs.
Why you're so upset about this?
I don't know why you just will extort me constantly all the time.
I don't know if that's really what extortion is. Everyone has hang-ups, Alex, and Pete has a hoodies hung up behind him. And exactly.
Well done, sir.
Well, excellent. Why don't we bring in our two next guests here? They are the creator of a new book called Danger and Other Unknown Risks, which is coming out very soon from Penguin Workshop. And you guys also know them as the team behind Unbreakable Squirrel Girl. Ladies and gentlemen, Erica Henderson and Ryan North. Hello.
Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. Thanks for having us.
Hi. I said Unbreakable Squirrel Girl, but I meant
she's also there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's been not breakable.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on. I'm so excited to chat about this book, which is awesome. It's coming out April 4th from Penguin Workshop. So we won't spoil anything about it necessarily, but just to give the pitch of the book. Actually, I'm nervous about giving the pitch of the book because there's so many different things that go on. Thanks for coming on. Goodbye. Ryan, do you want to give the pitch for the book if you don't mind?
Oh, I was going to toss that to Erica.
Oh, all right.
Okay, so Erica, please. Yeah.
Wait, you know what? I feel like we always do different things, so why don't you do one and then I'll. Like, whatever you don't get,
Okay, sure. So Danger and Other Unknown Risks is a story of a young woman named Marguerite and her talking dog, Daisy. And they've been raised since birth to go on an adventure to save the world. But they discover that it's not as easy as they think it is. And also, stuff I don't want to spoil happens. Erica, what did I miss?
Well, I feel like my elevator pitch always goes less towards like what actually happens in the book and more the themes. And so for me, it's a fun friendship filled adventure that's about building a future when there is none.
Ooh, that's way better.
Ooh, nice. Look at this.
This is why I tossed it to her.
Erica wins. I'm sorry, Ryan. I apologize.
They lock in together pretty well, though, I think. It's nice to hear both.
Well, I mean, on that note, and this is the big thing that I wanted to talk to you about first before we get more into the book. Obviously, you're both well-known for working on Squirrel Girl together. What is it about that partnership that really worked for the two of you that you wanted to continue onto this new book?
It's funny. I've said before that it felt like Marvel has kind of been like a dating site for friendship, where they I met Erica through Squirrel Girl, and like this is a job, right? Like this is she's the artist, I'm the writer. Do your work, you'll get paid. Thanks. But we really hit it off and became good friends, and wanted to continue that creative relationship even after the book had ended. And I gather that's not normal. I think normally, like, everyone's there to do a job. They're not there to make friends, but I was there to make friends.
Wow, you're a reverse reality show contestant.
Yeah.
I think we also just, I feel like we're different people that have, like, similar things that we obsess over.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were just little things that we started, like, really meshing about, and I think that led into more of a friendship than just like, here's the script, all right, I'm gonna hand this art off to the editor, and you know, never the twain shall meet.
See you never.
Well, what are yeah. Without prying too much, I mean, what are those things? Were there things specifically that were aspects of the book? Was it the creative relationship? What were those?
I feel like a story that I go to is there was one time we had like a dinner after New York Comic Con. Our editor was there. And this was, yeah, you know this. I feel like this story explains a lot of how we
this is a bad story.
No, this is a great story.
He's hanging his head in shame.
Eric is killing it this episode.
Bad because we're saying bad things, or because?
Yes, please proceed.
Okay, fine. Well, it was just basically, we were told that we were going to be shipped off to the Savage Land. We're going to move this one story thread earlier because New York was going to be home. They're like, not the two of us.
Yeah, this is what it sounded like. I was like, oh wow, that's a real place, I guess.
And they were like, we don't need you getting involved in like the larger event. So yeah, you'll just be elsewhere while the event is happening. And like, I think normally it'd be like, great, we've already sort of vaguely plotted the story out. It's fine. We know what we're doing. But we were like, hold on. What do you mean New York's going to be under a dome? How does that work? And we just start like, is water getting through? Like, how is sewage going to happen in a city this big?
Cities rely on food from the outside. You don't have cities without farmers. Where's the food coming? Like, we've just dug into the logistics of how New York could survive under a dome. And our poor editor, Will Moss, was like, that's not the story. Don't worry about that. No.
You're not even going to be dealing with this.
And when you thought about that sewage, you turned to each other and said, we're friends.
I think we were already there, but I think this is an example of the ways in which we like will hyper-focus and be like, wait.
And ruin someone else's story.
Well, obviously, Squirrel Girl was super successful, ran for a very long period of time. This, again, without spoiling anything specific, but you've already hinted at this a little bit, this is a very different type of story with very different characters and a very different focus. So when you were trying to create something original here, was there a thought of, okay, this is what we did on Squirrel Girl, let's aim in these different directions, or did that just happen naturally?
We had this unusual situation of kind of a blank slate, wherein Erica was going to do a book with a different writer who then didn't turn in a script for a long time. She was like, Ryan, why don't you write something instead? And I said, love to, let's do it. And so normally you have to have a story to sell to get a publisher interested. But in this case, they'd already signed off on something and I sort of slipped in through the back door. And amazing. So we had literally a blank page. We had a bunch of calls to talk about what we enjoy, what we don't enjoy. I remember grilling Erica on explaining her country to me. Like, I'm Canadian. I was like, Erica, I got some questions about America. why are you this way? Why you got to be this way? And one of the things we talked about was Chosen One narratives, where I remember saying, like, you know, America is a nation literally founded on rejecting the divine right of kings to rule. And yet you love these stories about people who are special by dint of their birth. Explain this. How do you reconcile these two points of view, Erica? Explain it to me now. Wow, and she was like, I don't
put on Erica.
Very intense conversations we had. But that ended up in the book. Like, part of the book, part of the first things we were talking about was Chosen One narratives and our frustration with what they seem to say about the world and the way they kind of put people in boxes and all that sort of stuff. The other thing we talked about was, and I forgot about this, Erica reminded me last week, everything she pitched, every story idea, what if we did a detective story? What if we did this? I would say yes, and there should be a talking dog. And I don't remember doing that, but it scans 100%. And I did get my talking dog, so it worked out.
Well, we wound up here because we were like, okay, let's start with the talking dog. Okay, like, we need to like have a story where that'll work. Like, if that's going to be in there, let's just do it. That's like,
if that's your deal breaker, North.
That's how they invented the Muppets as well, actually. They started with a talking dog and worked outwards. That's actually true now that I think of it, because Ralph was first.
Yeah.
There you go. Anyway, bad joke. Take it away.
Yeah, I just want to say, speaking of the talking dog, Daisy is just my favorite. I love it so much in the story. I love the feel, the tone of it. How do you come up with character voices when you guys are working? Is it a team effort? Is it, you know, like, I love the voice of Daisy in this so much. I just wondered about like how you kind of did that, or if you wanted to make it feel more humanish, or what the kind of process was for that.
Yeah. So we should talk about the collaboration part of this, because we did it really unusually in that it ended up being, you know, I would write something, send over to Erica. She would cross out whole chapters, write something back, send it back to me. I would cross some stuff out, write some new stuff, send it back and forth. And like, this is a collaborative process that you do not do with someone unless you absolutely trust and respect them and are secure enough in your own feelings, not be like, I poured my heart into that chapter and you just cut the whole thing. But it made the book feel so much more lived in, because all these directions, they don't go in the story. They could have gone there once at some point in the past, and we know it would have happened. And so we're not in the situation where we don't know all these different questions. We've answered them. We just haven't put all those answers in the book so we can hint to them. It makes it feel, to me, a lot more lived in. And it was a crazy collaborative process that I hadn't done before, and I think it worked out really well.
I agree.
This book just reminds me of two. It poked the parts of my brain of two loves of mine: Adventure Time and Tintin. And it feels like
those are great
chasing
comparisons. Thank you.
Well, it feels like it's
it really
sort of
is a modern
right
day Tintin.
Middle.
I would agree. Yes.
Well, both in the art style a bit, and just sort of the way adventure is like the primacy here is number one. Is that, are we always going to be chasing adventure? Is that the goal?
Like, Erica, I answered the last two. This one's yours.
Oh, man. So with Tintin, part of like what doesn't read anymore is like the colonialist parts of it. And that's been one of the weird things about like pursuing adventure, I think, nowadays, because you don't want to have that type of story. And I think we're kind of doing it, but we're exploring our own world as it changes. I think that's like fertile ground.
The adventure sort of genre feels like it is like you're saying, it's burnt. It's a little closed off. It feels like so many stories are going into like sci-fi fantasy but this feels like it is of that adventure core, which is just like a harder nut to crack, I think. So that's why I'm so curious to sort of live in that and find that tone while also still being in a different world that you are creating.
Well, let me throw something out to jump off of what you're saying, Justin, because you guys were saying that you wanted to play in this adventure format, this chosen one, talk about what that means. And again, without getting into spoilers or anything, but I think that's a pretty typical place to start with a YA series or a YA graphic novel series, right? And clearly, like, you're giving that arc and then twisting it and turning it and poking holes in it as much as possible. So talk a little bit about crafting that. Was there an eye to, okay, we're doing a book for Penguin Workshop and they're probably looking for a graphic novel series that they can launch. Let's figure out how we can kind of play around with that a little bit.
Well, it wasn't Workshop initially, and then later it was. So we really, like, it was really just a fully a blank sheet.
Originally, it was a DC Black Label book.
Yes.
I mean, I really think the adventure came from the idea that we were going to go towards fantasy, which came from the talking dog. It all comes from that one
closer to the talking dog.
The talking dog is the atom that exploded at the beginning of time.
That's so funny.
Well, talk about the main character then. We have this main character, Marguerite, who, other than the talking dog, no offense to the talking dog, is driving...
Talking human.
The talking human, if you will, is driving a ton of this narrative. What was important about her? Where did you start with her character? You've established the talking dog. Now you've moved on to the talking human. What did you want to happen there?
That's a really good question. I feel like I should have an answer for that.
I think there were two things that were important for me. And the first one was I really wanted her to be that person who's going out in the world for the first time, whether, you know, like you're leaving for college or, you know, you're just out of the house on your own, doing your own stuff. I wanted that to be an important part of her character, that like that journey that everyone goes on at some point. And then with that comes like some, you know, some naivete that she's a very capable person, but like, you know, how much did we know when we were first leaving the house? Not a lot.
And she has that confidence of youth that we all had, you know, in our mid to late teens. Like, I know how things work. I'm not an idiot, Mom. Like, I can do this. And like, that's just a fun time in your life until you learn you're fallible. And it's a fun place for a character, because you get to see her sort of realize throughout the course of the book that things are perhaps more complicated than what she thought they were. And maybe these complicated problems don't have the simple answers that you might have thought you could see. Why does no one else see the simple and easy to implement answer?
Not to keep going back to Squirrel Girl, but a lot of it not so sneaky way, but a lot of it was STEM, right? Like, you were sneaking in these STEM lessons in the middle of these very fun superhero stories, and a lot of that was the driving mechanism of the stories that were happening in the book. Here, you've got rules, but the rules are very specifically not science-based. They're, if anything, what you consider the opposite in terms of magic. Was that any part of the discussion, say, okay, we did that, we did the science-based stuff, let's go.
No more science. We're done with science.
I would never say that. Never in a million years. I mean, there's still rules. Like, one of the main things in the book is that she has a magic spell that's the only one she has, and it works differently in different regions. So we are setting down some rules. But I think the STEM thing with Doreen Green, Squirrel Girl, and the magic with Marguerite, both of them are clever young women who don't necessarily operate within the rules of the genre they're in. And so that's what made Doreen so refreshing, that she's in a superhero universe, but she doesn't know that, and she doesn't want to fight people all the time. She'd rather talk to them. And so suddenly, you know, she'll have a conversation instead of fist fight, and that's a breath of fresh air in the Marvel universe, but it's more normal for us. And Marguerite doesn't know that she's in this fantasy comic book. And so she does make a lot of, I think, reasonable, rational choices that fit her rather than necessarily fitting the genre. So she's never bending herself to what the genre needs. She's never, I wish I could think of a specific example, but for me, you can always tell when the character's doing something because that's what the writer wants them to do, and it feels like they're being pulled in that direction artificially. Well, what you want is a character to feel alive and do what they would do in that situation, not caring about what other people have done in stories in the genre, because they wouldn't know that. They're different people. That's a very writerly answer to a question. I'm sorry.
Well, I think that's where a lot of the collaboration stuff started, because like the first script came in, I was like, oh, I want to make a little tweak. And then when I tweaked, because it was an emotional tweak in the character, and then when I did that, I was like, oh no. Oh no, she wouldn't have done this. Oh no. Oh no. And it was just this domino. And I think that happened each time, like less and less each time, because, you know, there are 20-something drafts, but those drafts towards the end look very similar to each other.
Yes.
Yeah. We got a question here from YouTube. Your collaborations have so far produced youth-oriented stories. Is there something about working together that brings out the child in each of you?
Now, the funny story about this is that I've said before that my secret to writing all ages is that everyone keeps their clothes on and nobody swears. And then you just go with that and you trust that the youth will keep up with you and pick up what you're dropping down. And I, because like I said earlier, this book sort of started without me, didn't necessarily know what genre we were working in. And so in one of the early, very early drafts, I had a conclusion that was very much not YA. And our editor was like, this is a bit rough for the YA group. And I was like, yes, because that is what we are writing. And I was aware of that all along.
Wow.
So it's not necessarily innate in our collaboration, but I think it is a place. I mean, Erica's, her one of her most recent books is called Dracula Motherfucker. So like we both can work outside of this YA middle grade space. But I don't know. I really, it's where the story was, I think, that brought us
here. Yeah, I think
Erica, do you think so?
That's just the yeah, I think it's just the energy we had when we were talking to each other. I feel like some of the ideas we had may have ventured in other directions, and then those ideas never made sense. Like this, the story we were trying to tell. And it's just funny because, like you said, we don't individually always do those kinds of stories, but together for some reason.
Well, if I hadn't insisted on a talking dog, if I insisted on like a talking Jack the Ripper, who is also
or
a dog.
Swearing dog.
Swearing dog.
A nude swearing Jack the Ripper. How about that? Just to pitch that out.
Oh, that's fun.
I feel like that exists.
Probably. Yeah, that's, Jack the Ripper was not fully clothed all the time, I feel like.
Yeah. Since you are dealing, to get this slightly back on track, since you are dealing with age and youth and growing up, like we were talking about earlier, is this the sort of thing, if it continued in a series, do you think you would see the protagonist growing up in some way and the book potentially aging up? Or would it always be in this YA mode that you ultimately ended up in?
So we have literally never discussed this, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I think the more interesting thing is that she does age. Like the first Danger and Unknown, Other Unknown Risk is a story about confronting your youth in some ways and the things that you thought were true that you never really considered before because you were just a kid. And I don't know, for me, and maybe this is a reaction to Squirrel Girl too, where like superheroes are often in this eternal middle act where they have an origin and then they have a bunch of ventures and then they have a conclusion, but you never reach that conclusion. And we kind of dance around that with Doreen a lot because she does grow a lot over the course of our 5 years together. And we do bring into some sort of conclusion at the end of that run that feels like a capstone to everything we've done, but doesn't preclude necessarily any stories after that. But coming off of that, I mean, it's really interesting to me to have characters who have a life that brings them to particular places and changes them. And like we all do, we're not the same people we were 10 years ago, and stuff we've seen and done changed who we were. And I think that's in some sense feels more true. But Erica, do you agree if we were to do a second one, you want her to be the exact same age or different or what?
It would have to be, she would have to grow up. If not physically, emotionally, she would have to grow up, you know? Mm-hmm. She would have to deal with the next challenges that come. I find that like episodic thing where your characters always revert at the end of the series or episode or whatever to be unsatisfying in that way, especially when you wind up doing a story where it's just like, you know, how many times, and I love The Simpsons, but how many times can Homer like learn to not strangle his son and then like the next episode?
Well, cool. So by volume 7, it'll be a DC Black Label book and we'll finally loop back
as originally pitched. Yes. I think it's really like, I feel like the way hearing you guys talk about your collaborative process, it really feels like the story is first and you guys are a little bit along for the ride together collectively. How do you find that middle ground? Like, are you like the talking dog felt like it took center stage and you just sort of went with it. But like, when does something push on the edge that like, how does it work when it feels like that's not quite in the story?
I can say there's, oh, sorry, Erica, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that like, we definitely, there are points that we argued a lot on.
argued or debated?
I'm not trying to ask a controversial question. I just like it's really rare, I think, to see two people really in service of a story the way you describe it, and I that's amazing. So it's more of a compliment than the time you fought. You almost got in a fistfight.
Well, I was going to say, I don't want to spoil anything, but there is a character in one of my early drafts who died, and then Erica was like, no, this character is going to live, and this changes the story in these ways. And I was like, that's a big change, but it works. it lets the story blossom the way it wasn't doing before. So it's not really an argument more than it is being unafraid to say like, no, this is wrong. We're doing this instead, and throwing that back to each other.
We did a lot of that. Like we did a lot of that back and forth. Like that one character, there was like five scripts in a row where like every time it went back to someone, it was like, oh, okay, well, they've gone through an enormous change. Like first it's they're sticking around, and then it's they get to live, and then it's like, oh, they're a girl now.
All I was going to say without blowing up your spot, just for anybody who's listening to this, having read the book without spoiling anything, it's wild to me to hear you talking about this character that we're dancing around, because that's such a major part of the book. And I'm really trying to like skirt around spoilers here, but it's kind of fascinating to hear you talk through this, because the way the book works out would not have worked out that way. And the story would not have worked out that way. And it seems so intrinsic to the story that character ends up the way that they end up. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to hear that you collaborated and have ultimately came up with this thing that seems so crucial to the story.
And where you think they died, that's not where they died.
Okay.
Wow.
That came after we decided they live.
Yeah, and anybody listening to this, check out the book when it comes out April 4th, and then I guess listen to this again and you'll know what we're talking about.
Yes, exactly.
Mine will be blown. But I think that's part of what Eric was talking about, like where one change implies all these other changes, because so much of the story connects with all these other parts of the story that it did really feel like each revision was bringing us closer and closer to what it was, the shape it was supposed to be, in that it didn't feel like we were just revising, going in circles, trying to find out what the story. It was more like, if we do this, this is better. And if we do this, this becomes better. So it felt like we're just getting a better and better version of the story until we reach the end. And we're like, well, these small changes are basically not doing much. So I think we might have a book here.
Well, talking about that process of figuring it out, then doing a monthly comic book, obviously there's like a little bit of wiggle room sometimes depending on publishing schedules, but for the most part, it's like barreling ahead at full speed. Say, you got to turn to the script, you got to get this in for the art, you got to get this in for the letters, the coloring, and et cetera. It sounds like it wasn't necessarily the same process here, where you had a little bit more of an open field at least. Did that change the process? Did that allow for this slowly whittling it down until you got the story to the place where you knew hopefully it should be?
Yeah, definitely changed the nature of the story for sure, in that, you know, with a monthly comic, you've got 20 pages, it's $4 to even buy the books. You're trying to put as much words and jokes as you can into it, or literally cramming jokes in the margins. But in a graphic novel, you have a lot more space to breathe. We can have sequences that sort of spread out a bit over a couple pages that felt a little more, I keep reaching for like lived in. It feels a bit more real in that sense. Erica, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more focus on timing, which I always find really important. Like you can spend more time guiding someone through the way you want them to read it when there's space, you know, when there's no space. Like space equals time on a comics page, and when there's no space there, you sort of lose that sense of time.
Yeah, I think a great example of that is the Mr. Toadsworth page, where there's just kind of like these automatic doors in the department store. And there's this, you guys spend some time here in this moment in front of these doors, and it's such a cool kind of moment and very interesting and unique that normally you kind of would just blow by.
To explain, it is an entire page where we're watching people watch a frog go through automatic doors.
Yeah,
better than it sounds, baby.
Yeah, better than it sounds, right.
Well, but also another, not to keep blowing up pages from the book, but I feel like these are hopefully the least spoiler things, without mentioning which characters is, there's this absolutely gorgeous page that involves a kiss where it takes a time building up to that from the script's perspective, but you also have this beautiful image of the two characters silhouetted with a star field. Where did that moment come from? How did that develop?
The visual or the romance?
The visual, I think. The visual.
Okay.
What is romance?
What do kiss feel like?
How I get kiss.
I think part of it is since, and this is not really a spoiler because you see it on like the third page, the story is sort of told in, this story is being told. It's technically a letter that's being written to someone. I didn't realize we wrote an epistolary novel.
Surprise.
But
you guys are still learning so much about this book in the process. Yeah.
I only just realized, but I wanted it to be a little bit hazy. You know, like it's not focused on any one piece of it. Like we're not zoomed in on the kiss and we're not seeing exactly where everyone is because it is a silhouette, but like it's more of a feeling. And I think that's sort of how people remember an important kiss. You know, it's just sort of it's just sort of a zone that you're in.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I like about that is I think in the memory or memories like that you're describing, you're seeing yourself, but also you're seeing your sort of vision. That's why I thought the stars were so cool, because it's like, you know, a double view of it in a way.
Yeah, like there's things you're remembering that are part of it.
I just want to bring up just real quick a couple of comments from YouTube. Shoikler said, is this a kissing book? I'll tell you why. When I got to that scene, that was exactly my thought in my head, because there really is like a little bit of a sense of the Princess Bride throughout this that fairy tale. Like you're talking about, it's a note that's being read, it's a story that's being told. So I definitely got a little bit of a sense of that.
There are two kinds of books in the world, kissing books and not kissing books.
This is from Derek, says, speaking of which, is there any chance we could sneak some of that patented Ryan North running commentary on the bottom pages of FF?
Fantastic Four. I've heard of those guys. I almost did for the Johnny Storm issue, but it ended up, I felt like it would stand in the way in a way that it didn't in Squirrel Girl. So I decided not to do it. I wish I had a better explanation.
Who would the commentary be by?
It would be by Johnny. And I thought maybe like only Johnny's pages he'll be commenting, but I felt like, what am I doing here? It felt like it wouldn't be additive in the same way it was to Squirrel Girl. So I'm never say never, but at least for now.
Johnny Storm could have a James Gunn-like social media presence, and that could be the running commentary. Just always talking about everything in the middle of it happening.
We got one other for you, Ryan. This is from Stray Bullet. Looking at Ryan's background, is he in some sort of nether realm? Are you in a nether realm?
Right now? So the sun was setting, and I had really great lighting at the start of this.
Yeah,
and
it was now beautiful. Just...
It was beautiful.
That's gone away, and this is live, so I can't get up to turn on a light. So, yes, I am in the nether realm.
In the dark like that.
I like to set a dramatic mood where I'm just in complete shadow with one side of my face lit.
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful.
Working.
If I move this microphone a little bit, you can see our hoodies just for some Pete solidarity.
Oh, thank you, Ezra. Thank you very much. Excellent. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Bring it back. I love it. Before we let you go, any other projects you want to mention? Ryan, I know we just mentioned Fantastic Four that you're working on, which is
a phenomenal run
on that.
So good.
Anything else you want to talk about? Anything else coming up that you want to plug other than this book?
I'll go first. I have nothing coming up that I want to plug beyond Danger and Other Unknown Risks, but just recently I had my new nonfiction book come out called How to Take Over the World, which is taking supervillain plots from comic books and doing them with actual science and technology. So building an actual floating base.
Awesome.
It's a ton of fun. It's sort of the spiritual successor to How to Invent Everything. The same idea of like a fictional candy coating in the non-fictional core. So if you like my funny books, check out my books of prose.
Awesome. And Erica, what about you?
I think my next book's not coming out till... No, wait. Today, I had a story that I wrote and drew in the back of a Harley Quinn issue.
Yeah. Was that the one with the page so you showed me?
What was the page?
Joker page?
No, that's another one that I did that's not out yet.
Something to look forward to, everyone.
Something to look forward to.
But yeah, I guess... I kind of forgot. Yeah, I guess I've been doing some of these Harley Quinn backup stories, but one just came out. The first one just came out, like, today. But cool. My next book's out in October, which is Parasocial with Alex DeCampi, who wrote Dracula Motherfucker.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I do a podcast with Matt Wilson and Benito Sereno called Friends Till the End, where we usually talk about Chucky, and now we're on a hiatus. So we're talking about other killer doll movies.
Awesome. Wait, what did you think of Megan? I assume you talked about Megan on the podcast.
Oh yeah, that one's about to come out. So like watch out for that, guys.
Wow, listen.
I
love it. Okay, it was great. Yeah. It was actually the first thing that I thought had interesting commentary on like machine learning and AI and the industry, like the whole move fast and break things while having like a really good family dynamic story. It was good. It was weirdly good.
Yeah,
I'm excited for it. I haven't seen it yet, but I love the idea of taking the uncanny valley you get with CG characters and then like using it to make you have a revulsion to that doll. I thought that was brilliant.
It's
weaponizing
it's
the uncanny valley.
It's very funny, too, not to make this into a Megan podcast.
It's really taken a turn.
It did. We went from hoodies to Megan and everything
equally
in between.
Horrifying.
Ryan, Erica, thank you so much for coming on.
Yes.
This book is fantastic.
Really
I do hope it does phenomenally because I want to read more of Marguerite's and the Talking Dog's adventures.
Daisy.
Mostly the Talking Dog, of course.
Yes.
Where it all comes from.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
have a good
so
night.
Much.
Take care.
Thank you.
All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Danger and Other Unknown Risks. It's coming out from Penguin Workshop on April 4th, and it's great.
It's phenomenal.
So good.
Oh, my God. I love
Get it.
So much. Definitely pick it up. Thank the both for coming on. The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And folks, we are going to move to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. All you have to do for audience questions is drop a question in the comments and we will get right to them. But before we do that, this own. Justin, you still drinking your blood beer or whatever it was?
Yep. Love a blood beer. This is a wild berry beer from the farm share that I get. They have a brewery there, and I've had this in my fridge for a couple months, and it's time to crack it. It's also gigantic.
Woo.
It's as big as my head.
Nice. Pete, what about you? What are you drinking? What'd you steal from your brother's fridge?
Hey, man, be cool about it. All right. Don't say that so loud.
Clearly not cool about anything.
That's a good point. I'm drinking a Zadie's. I'm keeping it local.
Nice.
What does that mean?
Well, I don't go to a hoity-toity farm where people are making
what is it? What does Zadie's mean? What does it taste like? What is it like?
It's
like saying
some more beer, and it's a lager. It's it's a little heavier than a Bud, I would say.
Nice.
Wow, heavier than a Bud? That seems impossible.
Heavier than a Bud heavy. Yes. Alex.
I'm drinking a Negroni tonight. That's what I got going on.
Giant ice cube.
With a very giant ice cube. But it's good. Sad to go for a good old Negroni.
Is that a Death Star ice cube mold you got going on? Or
No, it's just starting to split in half. It's got like, I don't know how it works. Maybe Brett Macris could describe how ice cubes work. Or maybe Justin, you worked as a bartender for a while. It's a round ice cube, and for whatever reason, it always splits right in the middle.
I don't know the science behind that, but it's round, so you're not going to take an edge off. It's got to cut right through.
Yeah, there we go. All right, well, we got a couple of questions here that are not my questions about ice cubes. This one is from Straight Bullet. Of all the talking dogs throughout pop culture, which one would you like to be your pet?
Wow.
I feel like Pete has to have like 15 answers locked and loaded, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Daisy was glorious. I really was enjoying the voice of Daisy. I mean, you know, that surprise moment where the dog is like, surprise, is really funny. I'm trying to think of all the other talking dogs. I'm also a sucker for a talking chimp, you know, Umbrella Academy.
You love talking.
Yeah. I mean, anything that's isn't supposed to talk or anything that's kind of got like a Wookiee style to it, I'm all about it.
Yeah. You know who I love Wookiee is that style. Dog on Family Guy, whatever his name is.
What are you talking about? Brian?
Sure.
You are the Brian of the
What? What an answer from Alex. Half-hearted and maybe reverse liking that dog.
I don't know. Yes, Derek actually says Rolf for the Muppets. I'll call Rolf for the Muppets.
Rolf's good. I would shout out Jake the dog from Adventure Time. While it's on the rain. And less a pet and more a friend. Less a pet, more a friend.
Yeah. Great answer there. We got one from Nelson Martinez. Says, are you guys fans of Yellow Jackets on Showtime? I'm so glad it's back and curious on your thoughts on it so far. Buzz, buzz, buzz. So first, yes, absolutely.
Yes.
But Justin, have you been watching any of the second season yet?
Yeah, I watched the first episode. There's only one episode out now, right?
Oh, okay. I forgot. I'm sorry.
Also the dog from Talking Cowboy Bebop. I really like that one too.
Cowboy Bebop. The dog from Talking. The dog from Talking Town.
Look who is the talking dog now. Tom Selleck.
Nice. First ep came out this past Sunday and loved it. Into it. This show is good. It's different than a lot of other shows. The way they cut back and forth between the time periods, I think, is really cool and interesting. And it reminds me a little bit of Lost in that there are a million things on the table that they are dealing with and talking about, and who knows what they have figured out and where we're going.
Just to mention for anybody who hasn't checked it out, I know we talked about it quite a bit on our various podcasts, but it is a show about a girls' soccer team in the 90s that crashes in the Canadian wilderness. Some very weird things happen there. We start off with a scene where maybe they're slaughtering and eating one of their own. We're not quite sure. 2 years later, I believe, they're rescued from the wilderness. Again, we don't know how. And then a couple of decades on in the modern day, we catch back up with them where somebody may have figured out the secrets, maybe blackmailing them, and things spiral out of control out from there. Mm. One of the things that's fantastic about the first season that is very different from Lost is they kind of answer most of their questions in the first season. Like, they're not all of them.
Yeah. But they also pose so many more, which I think is very Lostian.
Yes, it is very Lostian. But at the same time, like, it's not, if you got tired of Lost Forever mysteries, this is not that. It's also very funny, very dark, very gross. One of the things that like struck me, and then we can move on to something else, but I was curious to get your take about this, Justin, watching this new season, is it's almost like a comedy thing, and it's not necessarily in a funny way, but like they do a really good job of playing the game of, hey, these are teen girls who are trapped here. And every episode, they find a new way of iterating that and adding something to that, where it's like, of course, this is what high school girls would do in this situation. It's not we're adults writing them as adults. It's we are writing, these are what teen girls do. There's a thing in the first season where they're like, oh my God, we're probably going to die of starvation. Why don't we throw a prom? And so they have a doom coming prom. Or there's even every episode, there's something like that that just pushes that forward. And it's
not. Anyways, I just want to give a shout out to Nan Smith there on Facebook. Droopy, great answer. one of my all-time favorite talking dogs. Makes me think of Chili Willy, which is not a talking dog, but an adorable
Who's your favorite talking dog on Yellow Jackets? I forgot to mention all the characters are talking dogs.
There's teenage girls.
Now that would make me check it out.
They all have a talking dog.
Yeah.
Well, Peter, wow, I like how you dress.
Looks like you're meeting somebody again. Ooh.
You kooky crisp. Pete, you drag the conversation from a pop culture to another type of pop culture, Chili Willy and Droopy.
Yeah, I just was tired of talking about this show that I don't watch, so I wanted to.
Oh, I think that's called listening.
Yeah, I was tired of listening.
That's what listening is. Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's called listening.
Oh, sorry, Pete.
So let's talk about this one here.
Let's put it over on a
break. Oh, great. I'm really glad I gave you all access to the question.
How many Mountain Dews can you drink in a day? The question is, like, how many can I drink or how many do I? Or how many do I want to? You know what I mean?
I'm sorry. I'm bored of this. Pablo says, what's the worst drink you read good comics to and why?
Mountain Dew, I think, is that quite the previous question answers.
Yeah, I think Easy Reader is like, what's up, gang? I think that's important to talk about.
Are you guys a fan of Yellow Jackets on Showtime? I'm so glad it's back and curious about your thoughts on it. Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Droopy is pretty great, though. You know
for those
I mean?
Of you listening, you may be wondering why this is nonsense. It's because everyone, the three of us all have access to putting text on the screen, and it's a power we can't seem to handle. So let's just be cool and answer some of the questions.
All right, here's a question. No, here's a question from Pablo. Lassie? What do you guys think? What's your take on that?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
The answer is yes.
You got a yes?
The answer
Justin,
is yes.
Are you a yes or no?
Oh, yeah. Big yes to Lassie. Save your life.
Okay. Why don't we go to an actual question here? This is from Schoeckler. What are some of your favorite cosmic horror tales?
Ooh, nice. I mean, that's there are different ways to take this, but I'm going to throw, this isn't a comic book answer, but Twin Peaks feels like cosmic horror in a very particular slant of it. And that was the first answer that came to mind for me.
Pete, you got one? No, come on.
Lassie?
Yeah, we're done. What are some of your favorite cosmic horror tales, Pete?
I mean, I don't like horror. But the one we were reading about that kind of like a ghost ship was pretty creepy. Also, Cosmic Ghost Rider. Dead Seas. Cosmic Ghost Rider is that counts. So that's what I'm going to say.
All right.
That counts.
Yeah. I mean, I throw out like elements of Ice Cream Man sometimes feel like cosmic horror.
Good. That's a great answer.
Okay. All right.
That works. And Mike Mignola's stuff, like a lot of that stuff skirts it sometimes, or he'll go into Lovecraftian things. So that's always good stuff as well. To get back to this real quick, because you didn't answer it, Pete, this is from Omnia Soul Archo. How many Mountain Dews could you drink in a day?
Well, I have drinking way too many, especially when I was a kid experimenting with life. My record is 20, and I'm not proud of it, but that was a crazy day. That was a crazy
day.
Wow, that's too many. Pete, this is definitely some sort of ghost situation you're in.
I had a research project too when I was in college, and I was just I needed to stay up and couldn't sleep, so that's what happens.
Right, was the most, was the paper just you screaming into your laptop? What would, look, do you remember what the subject of that you had to stay up all night doing?
Oh yeah, man, it was on Edward Ruloff, the learned murderer. He was this dude in Ithaca, New York, and there was a bar named after him who was like this genius murderer who got away with all these horrific murders, and they finally kind of got him, and we were doing this research project on him. So
I'll tell you what, he also got away with a great bar.
I wouldn't make jokes about this. This guy is a horrible person, but...
No, but it was a good bar, right? Back me up here, Pete.
I mean, it was a great bar, but it's weird to talk about, to bring that up when we're talking about
I
the
always
horrible...
said they killed it. Right, Pete? Would you agree with me on that?
God, I hate you so much.
Yeah,
they
one
really
of my favorite things
it
is every Tuesday
killing.
when the people coming in were a little older, they'd be like, hey, we're slashing prices. Right, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, the size, it was just a regular can, you know.
If you're going to bring this in, you also have to read the questions. So it says 20 of what size. We're doing an audio podcast. You got to read the stuff.
This is very fun.
Some people watch it on YouTube, you know.
Great. Pablo DiMartinez.
Like letting a chat GPT take over running.
What classic comic books would you read as an adult today?
All of them.
Yeah.
Let me flip the question. Is there a comic that you're like, I'm sort of over that in your collection? Like, I wouldn't go back. I feel like I've progressed as a thinker, as a Mountain Dew drinker. I wouldn't ever go back to this particular comic.
Man, I don't know. I think... I know I've been bringing this up a lot, but this is like literally every day, all day. But my 8-year-old has started religiously reading comics. And so he's been asking me about a lot of the stuff that we have in our bookcases, like about the different storylines. On the way to school today, we were talking about the Dark Phoenix saga. I was trying to think, like, should he read that? Is that a thing that other than the historical context makes sense as a story? And I think that's something that does, but there's definitely been a lot of things that we've talked about. Like, honestly, I think a lot of older comic storylines work more as historical documents rather than something that has the same emotional impact. And that's because... Yeah. Just basic things like the density of the writing, like there's a lot of words and characters standing around and it's not dynamic in the same way that we want from comics today. So some of them work, but some of them don't. I know that's a very vague thing, but like, there you go.
I guess I would say the Marvel swimsuit issues.
All right. Fair enough.
Derek Mainhart, I would maybe pass on Youngblood.
Yes, Pete is still bringing up comments, but not actually reading them out loud. This is from Frederico Rosa says, did you guys see Secret Invasion got its release date leaked?
Oh,
leaked!
So this briefly went up, I believe, last night as we're taping it on Disney Plus. A page got posted, and I couldn't find it, by the way. Like, somebody posted on Twitter. By the time I got there and checked, which was probably an hour later, the page wasn't there anymore, so I can't verify it or anything, but it was a page for Secret Invasion that said it's coming out June 21st and it's 6 episodes. Disney hasn't confirmed it yet. They haven't said that it's happening, but that certainly seems to line up with it. Yeah. Makes sense, right?
I think so. 6 episodes makes a lot of sense. That makes the most sense. The date, I think that's a fine date. I don't know if that's the date doesn't seem purposeful, unless it's a coming off of a Star Wars thing that we'll just be finishing or something like that.
I think, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how they're rolling out this Marvel stuff at this point because there's been such a huge gap. They have Mandalorian is running through beginning of April, like April 15th or something like that, whatever that is. So there's definitely going to be a gap there, potentially. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. It's interesting. Well, just a larger topic. Like, it's interesting just how coy all of this has become. Mm-hmm. When, like, you know, a year ago, it was like we could mark our calendars with all the stuff that was coming out and know exactly when.
Pablo says the release was official according to IGN based on a comment that I believe Pete brought up but didn't read out loud. Here's another one. If you could choose a comic to get an adaptation similar to The Last of Us as a limited series, which would you choose?
Ooh, great call.
Justin, you going to say concrete or am I?
You could say it. You, okay. I feel like you're the concrete guy. You've taken it, fully taken ownership of it.
I think sometimes we go back and forth, but all right, man.
I'm not saying it out of a sad place. I think it's great.
So, I guess if we're talking about a Last of Us limited series, we're saying like prestige HBO limited series. You'd say concrete because I wouldn't want a limited series of concrete. I want them to like really take their time and sit in it.
Wow. I feel like you could do a good limited series with concrete. And similar to Last of Us, if it crushes, then you do a couple more. But yeah. Let me throw.
Yeah. You want to go on mute for a second for no particular reason? Okay, great. Pete, what would you want to see? What would you want to see like other than concrete, though? Any other books?
Well, I mean, there's stuff, I really liked Gravel. I thought it was kind of this cool, like dirty
concrete hairy, gravel. Yeah.
It was a dirty Harry Road magician type of character that was, I thought was very interesting.
Yeah. No, that is a good call. Gravel would be fun.
If we're talking about Last of Us, I guess maybe I would want to try their comic. What's it called? Walking Dead would be cool.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, yeah. Do you think they could pull that off, though? I feel like zombies is an ongoing TV series.
True. It'd get compared to Last of Us. It would get compared to Last of Us, but, you know, they would just try to have to do it in a new way and occasionally touch on elements.
Do you think, though, like, if they did a Walking Dead series, people would be like, oh, you're just copying Last of Us. You're just doing kind of like the same thing, but instead of fungal zombies, it's regular zombies.
Well, maybe they could do a thing where every couple episodes take a big swerve, you know? Mm-hmm. But then have some episodes that are like just like Last of Us that are like cram all of Last of Us tropes into one episode.
What I would love is like if there was some sort of arc, a Walking Dead, like if they did a Walking Dead show, one of my favorite episodes of Last of Us is the one with the cannibal preacher. If they took that and expanded that out to
I wanted more time with him.
Oh man, that was so much fun. That was good. So I wanted to see more.
Drag out the horror. You know?
I want to give a shout out to some of the people who are commenting some great stuff. Bitterroot, Easy Reader brought up Chew, Stray Bullies brought up House of Slaughter. A lot of great stuff.
Righteous Thirst.
And you're not, just to make clear, you're not going to read the one that's on screen, right?
Peter? Exactly. you're starting to catch on to my bit.
That's not a bit. Righteous Thirst or Vengeance from Michael Northrup. Yes, that's a great call. And that's already very cinematic. If you're not reading that Rick Remender story that finished, I want to say 3-4 months ago.
Let's talk about this one for a second, because I'm curious to actually get your take on this, Pete, for real. Pablo says, I'm waiting on movies or TV shows based on milestone characters. Obviously, we got Static Shock back in the day. But what do you think about that? How would Milestone work on TV? What would you want to see?
I think they could do a really cool, like kind of like 80s style to kind of capture a little bit of the kind of Milestone style a little bit. And it would be an awesome TV show, somewhere between 6 to 10 eps, and just kind of really kind of sit with some of the characters. I think it would be phenomenal.
What would you want to see? Go ahead.
Sorry, shouts to that. I think it was the second or third story in the Milestone Anniversary book that we just talked about on the stack. Yeah. That was Static Shock Beyond.
That was really cool.
That was really cool.
Well, quick follow-up question though, Pete. Would you prefer to see like Avengers style, you get all of the characters get their own series leading up to a mashup series, or would you want to see Milestone, the series that includes everything?
Well, you're kind of really messing with the geek in me, because part of me would be like, oh my God, if we got Milestone, we could see everybody. But if they wanted to focus just on a couple and really flesh out the story, that would also be amazing. But it would be sick if they did kind of like a whole group thing. I just don't know if everyone would kind of geek out about that, or if they started individuals and then kind of built towards it, you know?
Yeah.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Awesome. And I think that is it. Thank God for your audience questions.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to move on.
Thank God. Huh? Is that stressing you out?
Yeah, just a little bit. Just a little bit. It's fine.
Derek Maynard says, say my name, Pete, damn it. Say those names.
Too many producers spoil the soup, I always say. Why don't we move on to the next section, which is my favorite section No, it's not. It's just a section. Trivia with Dean LeMage.
Wow. Definitive. Definitive. Alex's least favorite section.
Hey, and I did bring it up and, to cue somebody up for trivia. So we don't have anybody lined up for it.
Oh, nice.
Well, this is the part we give back to the lovely
audience.
Maybe
somebody could pop in.
You know, it's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online. Or, of course, because we're talking about comics, you also have the option to Long John Silver's, you know, because that makes total sense. Yeah, it's an opportunity to win and, you know, spend some money on some comic books, which everybody would want to do.
So, yes, if anybody does want to participate in trivia, just let us know. Put your hand up in the comments and we will do a comment style trivia today.
It's like it's like in Planet of the Apes when they first started using tools. That's like Pete figuring out these comments.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems fun in the moment, but it's actually very dangerous.
Ooh, Pablo's hand up, please. All right. I think, Pablo, you got it. So, Pablo, just comment in the comment section and we will get to it.
Yeah, just start typing A now and then we'll just get awarded to you shortly.
All right, cool. Exactly. So today's trivia is a topical comic news and a small nod to the legend, Barbara Bawson, RIP. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. Moon Knight number 14 will bring back which long-lost villain? Is it A, Morpheus, B, Not a Dope, or C, Peggy Pope?
Not a Dope, Peggy Pope, Not a Dope, Peggy Pope, Not a Dope, Peggy Pope, Not a Dope, Peggy Pope.
So you're just going for rhymes now is what's going on, right?
Well, you know, in the first one, you know.
Okay. Yeah, one of them has to be right, technically, right?
Yeah, so Pablo's correct. Morpheus is the villain they're bringing back in Moon Knight number 14. I'm looking forward to that. Should be some fun stuff. Here we go. Question number two. Who is teaming up with the Thing to take on a Celestial? Is it A, the Hulk, B, what do you call it when you're in debt to the Australian Outback, or C, Owen Bush?
I don't know. What do you think? Oh, Nonsmith says I wanted it to be number three.
Yeah.
Usually you don't do numbers. Usually you do.
Yeah. A, you're correct there, Pablo. What, it is A. A is correct. The Hulk and the Thing will be teaming up to take on the Celestial. Very exciting.
Celestial?
There you go. There you go. I think it's appropriate that you correct me sometimes.
You nailed it.
No, I let you slide when you slur your way through stuff. Cool. All right. So the last one, question number three.
God. The news mentioned hoodies at the beginning of the show and you lost your mind.
Well, you know, this is still a little backed up from that fun we had with the last podcast. All right, here we go. The last one.
Which hasn't got up yet, Pete.
Yeah, yeah, which doesn't make sense to anybody but us. All right, here we go. The last question. The new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game is being compared to blank. Is it A, God of War, B, Sewer Sam, or C, Will Wheaton?
Will Wheaton.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pablo, you are correct. It is a God of War, which makes me very excited for the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game that is based off the last Ronin graphic novel. So, should be some fun.
It should be some fun.
All right, yeah. There we go. Did Pablo says A?
That,
did you get it
that
right?
Is correct, yes.
Wow. Incredible.
And, of course, I know, Zalbin, you're dying to know, we're talking about the 1984 hit The Last Starfighter, which
okay,
great movie.
Yeah, is it?
I don't know, I haven't seen it in a long time, but as a kid I was super impressed.
I liked it as a kid.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Congratulations, Pablo. You would have won a $25 gift card to either Midtown Comics or Long John Silver's, your choice. Just shoot us an email and we will get that off to you. Now, new comics coming out this week, once again, big surprise to everybody. What are you looking forward to, Pete?
Unstoppable Doom Patrol number one, as well as It's Clobbering Time.
Mm. This is Steve Scroggie.
Scroggie, yep.
Scroggie.
Yep.
doing the Hulk and the Thing beating up some monsters.
And it's not a one shot, it's ongoing.
I know. Yeah, which is big surprise.
How about that for a fun surprise? I'm looking forward to Local Man number 2 from Tim Seeley and Tony Fleet.
Nice one.
Man, this comic about a guy who's on an Avengers-like super team is disgraced and comes back to his hometown to deal with the consequences. I have been loving for the first two issues. Really gets into and captures the small-town vibe as well as the great superhero action. We get backups where we see sort of 90s-style comics about the time that the hero Crossjack is on the super team. Like, really, really loving it. And the only other one I wanted to say was Once Upon a Time at the End of the World.
Oh, yeah.
The Jason Aaron romance apocalypse wild read, just like you'd expect from Jason Aaron, is fun and worth checking out.
Yeah, definitely. You guys took some great ones there. I'll throw out It's Jeff number 1.
Oh, yeah,
of
dude.
Course.
I know. I'm an easy mark. Kelly Thompson, Guri Hairu. Love both of them. This is a collection of the digital strips that they've been doing about the Land Shark, who is friends with Hawkeye. Absolutely delightful. Very excited to talk to you guys about that and all of those books in our Stack podcast, which pops up 9 a.m. on Wednesdays in the Stack feed, as well as the Comic Book Club feed. So definitely check it out. Now, before we go, I want to mention this week we are sponsored by one of our amazing listeners, Damon Becton. Worlds Away is back with its third and final Kickstarter campaign, collecting issues number 1 through number 4. This new comic is written by Mad Cave Studios 2021 Talent Search winner Damon Becton and is for fans of The Last God, Radiant Black, God of War, and Saga. When an intergalactic soldier and her estranged young daughter crash land on a mystical alien planet full of dangerous creatures and magic-wielding beings, the duo must brave this new land with their high-tech armor to find the resources to escape with their lives. Think Radiant Black meets God of War. That should sell you on it, right? With already 2 successful Kickstarter campaigns and over $10,000 pledged for the first 2 issues, the final campaign still needs your help to bring this epic saga to a close.
Don't die.
With the final 2 issues, I don't want to die before this Kickstarter campaign closes. Worlds Away number 3 and 4. Join the 190+ backers today and help bring the winner of You Promise Me Comics 2022 Kickstarter Comic of the Year Award to life. Go to www.worldsawaycomic.com today to pledge for digital copies or print copies or both. That's www.worldsawaycomic.com. Kickstarter campaign ends March 31st at 12 p.m. So get in there now and check that out. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Jesse Sharon for coming on. Definitely check out The Other Happy Place on Zoom. That is up now for the next 15 days. It is terrifying and awesome. Also, Danger and Other Unknown Risks coming out from Penguin on April 4th from Ryan North and Erica Henderson. Another great book. You all are going to love this one.
Great.
Definitely
book.
Check it out. A couple of other things to plug. Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast, is rolling out weekly. Pete and I had a mostly pleasant discussion about Batman 1989.
Can't wait to hear
on
it.
Friday. Mostly pleasant, I think. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. We're now doing Marvel weekly Marvel news updates. So check that out. Those are rolling out of the Marvel Vision feed. And Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast, is starting again tomorrow night, Wednesday. It's all back.
Because
Riverdale.
The show's back, so we're back.
Final season.
I'm not ready.
Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night. Come find us. We're everywhere.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.